Champions Mojo is part of the CG Sports Network.
And the mom said to me, she said, am I a bad mom for putting my daughter in this situation? That's like, you know, basically, am I a bad mom for putting my daughter in a sport that's going to make her so upset, that's going to take her to this level of just complete devastation? And that I was really taken aback because I'd never thought of it from the parent's perspective like that. And I said, no, you're actually giving her a gift. You are giving her this experience that most people, you know, that don't compete in sports, if they ever even do get an opportunity to put everything on the line like this, of course we're going to fail. Like, we're human. We're going to have so many failures in life. And look at what she just learned at such an early age.
Welcome to Champions Mojo, a podcast to bring out your inner champion. Your hosts are sisters-in-law Kelly Palace and Maria Parker. Kelly is a former Division I head swim coach, Olympic trials qualifier, and holds national and world records in masters swimming. Maria holds world records in endurance cycling and won the world's toughest bike race, Race Across America. Both are certified health and life coaches. Our goal is to inspire you through conversations with champions. And now, your host, Kelly Palace.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Champions Mojo podcast. And as usual, I am co-hosting with Maria Parker. Hello, Maria.
Hi, Kelly. Good to be here. How are you?
Oh, I am doing great. And I'm so excited. Today is going to be a fabulous show with Kara Lynn Joyce, who is a three-time USA Olympic swimmer. Kara competed in the 2004, 8, and 12 Olympics for Team USA, winning a total of 4 medals. As a swimmer at the University of Georgia under Jack Bowerly, Joyce won 18 NCAA titles and set the American record in the 50-yard and 50 meters freestyle. Her Olympic journey has been captured in the beautiful and inspirational film Touch the Wall, which has been screened globally in theaters and is available online at Amazon Prime. There's much more on Kara, and let's check in with you, Maria, for that.
Sure, Kelly. In 2017, Kara founded the LEAD Sports Summit for teenage girl athletes. LEAD connects female athletes with accomplished women in sports in yearly summits and regional seminars. In the last few years, the LEAD company has grown from a yearly event to an online community and academy. The LEAD Sports Academy is a home base for teenage girl athletes, parents, and coaches. It has comprehensive online courses in leadership, confidence, sports psychology, and more. But right now, let's just welcome Kara to Champions Mojo. Welcome, Kara.
Hi, ladies. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Welcome, Kara. We are just thrilled to have you. And
absolutely.
Let's start off with, tell us what you've been up to lately with the pandemic, and how are you handling all this?
Oh my gosh. It's so funny. Like, I don't know if there's a right or wrong way to handle this. And there's unfortunately like no playbook, you know, like, oh, let's look back. I mean, I guess we could look back 100 years to the last time we did this, but I've been doing okay. I'm naturally an introvert, and I feel like this quarantine kind of brings out like my best introvert qualities, which are probably the things that I, you know, like, oh, I don't have to leave my house. Are you kidding me? Great. Yeah. Staying on a Friday night. Sounds good.
That's funny.
So secretly, like, I've actually kind of loved quarantine, but it's just been so hard to watch everything unfold, especially being somebody that comes from the sports world and continues to work inside the sports world. It is just so hard to see, you know, what all these athletes are going through. But other than that, you know, I think just taking it day by day and doing the things that you can do one foot in front of the other, control the controllables, all those cliches, but they're honest to God, that's the right way to go about things.
What are you doing with LEAD during this period? Obviously, or maybe not obviously, have you canceled the summit for 2020 or 2021?
We did have to make a very difficult decision to postpone the event. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an interesting, the business that we have, you know, our event brings in 150 girls from 32 states and 5 countries this year.
Wow.
And regardless of, and it's in Denver, Colorado, it was to be in Denver, Colorado. And regardless of, you know, how Denver specifically was doing with the pandemic or even the surrounding states or even the US, it was just not something that we could risk bringing everybody together, you know, from all these places for 4 days. And the way our summit works is the girls room together, three to a room. And we went through like a million different scenarios on how we could continue, you know, actually host the event. And we'll do temperature checks, we'll have gloves, we'll have masks, we'll have, you know, all of those things. And it got to a point where it was like, you know, we'd be one of the first in-person events that everybody would experience and having to go through all of those precautionary steps. I think for us, it would be more of a distraction than productive to, so the idea of running the event and having to do all of those things, it just wasn't worth it. And then not to mention, I mean, we don't want to risk anybody getting sick. That would be the, you know, the worst thing that could happen. And I'm very protective of all the girls that come. And we did make the difficult decision to postpone.
Can you give us a background on exactly what LEAD is? You've got such a great legacy already of being a three-time Olympian, but I feel like what you started in 2017 with this LEAD Sports Summit is, you know, a real amazing legacy. So how did it start? What are your kind of goals for it? And how are, sounds like you're still going to be serving people even though you can't do in-person events. So could you give us kind of that background?
Yeah. How much time do we have? No, I'm just kidding.
A lot.
Yeah.
As much as you need.
Yes.
Cool. I retired from swimming in 2012. And for quite a few years, I did clinics. So I traveled and did clinics on the weekends. And I coached private lessons in Denver, where I was living at the time. And my passion has always been, you know, in the sport. And I think it's retirement, no matter what you retire from, is just a very difficult process. And it doesn't matter how old you are. You know, I can retire at 26. Or, you know somebody who retired at 70 and still it's hard to not be accountable to anyone or anything. You know, one day you wake up and you're retired and all the things that you did, your routine is gone. So retirement for me, it was challenging, but my goal was to say yes to as many things as I could to figure out what I really liked and what was gonna, you know, click and hopefully help me move forward in my career. And so that involved a lot of clinics and a lot of private lessons and stuff like that, because my passion was just in the sport. And through that process, I began working so much with teenage girl athletes. And where I was teaching at a swim school called Swim Labs, my client list became probably close to 75% teenage girls. And I would coach anybody from a summer league swimmer to an Olympic trials or Division I swimmer to a triathlete or a master swimmer. But my client list really focused on teenage girls just by word of mouth. And it got to a point where there was a wait list to get in for my private lessons. And it was like 6 or 7 or 8 months long. I don't even know, honestly. And while that's like really flattering and cool that people appreciated what I was doing for girls, it made me feel like I wasn't doing enough, because there had to be a way where I could serve more than one girl at a time. And, you know, when they would come to me to work with me at a swim school, it was never really about their swimming. You know, they would come after a championship meet for a private lesson and they would be, you know, really bummed about their performance, or they would come in the middle of the season and they would be down about, you know, how just things were going. And the solution was never like, oh, you know, I know exactly what the problem is. Your hips are just 15 degrees off center. And if you fix that, everything in your life will be better and your swimming will be better. It was never the solution. It was always more to do with their confidence, more to do with the interactions that they were having with their friends, their coaches, their parents. And so I had no problem just sitting and talking with these girls over and over and over again. And so when I went to try to find a solution for, you know, what can I do to serve more girls? I actually went looking for maybe there's some kind of retreat or summit that I can send all of these girls to, and I couldn't find it. And so that's kind of what led me to start the LEAD Sports Summit. And we hosted our very first event in Austin, Texas, in September of 2017. gosh, I think we could max out. The hotel wouldn't let us bring in more than 76 girls because, I mean, we just rented like their biggest conference room, not even a ballroom. It was like a conference room. Like we stretched the space in there. And 5 weeks after I launched the event in April, we hadn't sold a single ticket yet. And I was like, oh,
oh my gosh,
this is so stressful. And maybe I'm missing the mark a little bit. Maybe like what I think they need isn't what they really need. And, you know, starting a business is really difficult and a lot of it is trial and error. And what I learned was I wasn't just launching another swim camp. It wasn't like, oh, which, you know, swim camp do you want to go to? Stanford this year, Georgia this year, Texas? Like, you know, those are all very familiar things that you know exactly what you're going to get. But when I started LEAD, we launched something completely different that didn't exist yet. And so we had the job of then educating the market on what LEAD was and why it was so important. You know, word did get out and we sold our first ticket after 5 weeks. And I think maybe 6 or 7 weeks later, we actually sold our 76th ticket and had to close registration.
Wow. So
that little learning curve for us and just, you know, continuing to push forward and not get discouraged was really important. And then we ran the event and it was unbelievable. I mean, we brought in specialists in confidence, nutrition, leadership, sports psychology, and then a bunch of female Olympians that are, you know, everybody's heroes, my heroes, Elizabeth Beisel, Missy Franklin, Madison Cox is at our first event. And I mean, I had pretty high expectations, but it just blew me away. You know, I think for all of the women there that were working the event, we wanted the event to be exactly what we needed when we were that age. And it just became such a personal mission for everybody there. And it was, yeah, it was really life-changing. I mean, for me and also for the girls. And so we host the event every year. 2018, 2019, we're in Atlanta, Georgia. 2020 is postponed, but it will be in Denver in 2021. Our event sells out now in just a few weeks every year. And we have lots of girls that return, girls that come with their friends, girls that come alone. And we bring in, again, just a roster of incredible female champions and specialists that want to give back and really help this generation and give them the things that they wish that they had. And then because of the kind of ran into another problem with the event filling up so fast, it felt a lot like when I was at Swim Labs and I couldn't serve all of the girls that, you know, were waiting on the wait list. And I was like, okay, well, what can we do now to serve these families? Because we generate a wait list every year with LEAD, a couple hundred families long. And so we, about a year and a half ago, got to work on launching our first ever online academy. And just over a year ago, we recorded online courses for all of our specialists. So confidence, leadership, sports psychology, nutrition. And we launched the academy in May of this year. And we have girls from all over the world that can come to its LEAD Sports Academy and hear from our specialists. And maybe LEAD was, you know, a little bit too far away for your family to make the investment, or maybe it was just too big of an investment, or a host of other things where you couldn't actually get to the event, but now you can get all of that incredible information and content online. And so, yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
It just seems, you know, I watched the promo video and I thought, ah, as a teenage girl, you know, not even an athlete, this would have been so incredible. Was there something in your personal life that, you know, as you grew through those years of, you know, of difficulty and awkwardness as a teenager, that also, you know, helped sort of motivate you to create something like this?
I can't really pin it on one specific thing, but just a little background on me. I'm the youngest of three. I have two older brothers. My whole life, all I wanted was an older sister, but you can't really go back in time and fix that.
That's impossible. Yes.
Yeah. But that being said, I mean, my brothers were incredible role models for me and they still are to this day. Just by nature, from being the youngest, I was always put in, you know, groups with my brothers, like even at the pool, at swim camps, at practice, I'm always swimming with the older kids. And I always had really great mentors and people to look up to. And it wasn't until really the end of my career when I was swimming in Denver, Colorado with Missy, and we were training for the 2012 Olympics. that I felt like for the first time in my life, the roles were reversed. And that being said too, I was also very young for my grade. I started kindergarten when I was 4. So I like always went through like feeling like the youngest and the smallest. But in 2011 and 2012, you know, I was 25, 26 years old swimming on a team with high school kids. And I was the only adult there. And I mean, I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved just the energy that kids can bring. And I loved being on this journey with Missy where she was going for her first Olympics and I was going for my third, but everything was like new again through her eyes. It was really refreshing. But really quickly, I learned that these kids were watching and listening and repeating everything I said, everything I did. And I took that really seriously. I wanted to be a good role model for them. I wanted to be there for them. And I think that was really the start of my journey, being a mentor and being a role model for young kids. But I also had such a great experience, you know, always being the youngest and being around older people that looked out for me and wanted what was best for me. And I think that that really helped set the tone for what, you know, I could do, turn around and give it to the next generation.
Are you familiar with the book Reviving Ophelia by Mary Piper?
No, I want to write this down though.
Yeah, it is. It's a book from 1994, but it still holds up. It's just based on the psychology of how girls go from, you know, about age 10 to, you know, when they mature into later teens, that they lose that sass, that confidence that, you know, we had as young girls at 10 and 12. And then, you know, you start to think about boys or think about your looks or think about the societal pressures of things. And Reviving Ophelia is just, it's a classic for a lot of scientific, there are a lot of case studies in that book that show that girls who do sports are much more likely to endure that stormy period between, you know, age 10 and age 15, where she calls them reeds in the wind, like these sapling young women that they're either going to grow up strong and straight and confident, or they're going to get blown over in this storm that young women, even today, I mean, this is still, they just had the 25th celebration anniversary of this book to show that this is still happening in society. So what you're doing is just, it's amazing. And I think if you read Reviving Ophelia, you'll be like, oh my gosh, you know, this is exactly what we're trying to do. That I love that. And so my question with that little bit of background there, is this for mostly swimmers or anybody that can make the investment, or is it for all girls or swimmers?
So the LEAD Sports Summit, we've only hosted events within swimming so far. Our foray into other sports will be postponed just a little bit for obvious reasons, but the LEAD Sports Academy is for all female athletes. And it's so funny. We've had moms that have watched the online courses with their daughters and they're like, wait a minute, I want to share this with some of my mom friends because I think all of us. And it's so true. So the LEAD Sports Academy was specifically designed not per sport, but just for female athletes. And so it can be viewed by anybody, but really, I mean, I think men should watch it too. There's some modules that go really in depth on the difference between like men's and women's brains, why we think the way we do. And I've like sat and watched it with men and they're like, whoa, that's so true. And even male coaches could benefit tremendously from watching this and just learning more about how their female athletes work and what makes them tick and the best ways to communicate with them. It's so valuable. So, but yeah, so the LEAD Academy it's really for everyone. I would just want to go back on something that you said about Reviving Ophelia. So while I was teaching, before I even started LEAD, and this is definitely one of the things that led me to down this path, I had a mom bring her daughter in for a lesson. And I had been working with this girl for years. She had just qualified for her very first state meet. And I think she was 10 or 11 at the time. So she's young. And it took everything in her to make the cut time. It was this huge deal. We celebrated. It was so exciting. And then she went to the meet and, you know, like, like what happens, you know, she really underperformed. I think she got dead last and she was devastated. And so the mom scheduled this lesson after her meet and she brings in her daughter and she was like, Kara, you know, we don't care if she swims today. Can you just talk to her? Mm. And she tells me this story. You know, we got in the car after the swim meet and she was like, my daughter was crying so hard and she was so upset and it made me cry. And then, you know, that made her daughter even more upset seeing her mom cry. And the mom said to me, she said, am I a bad mom for putting my daughter in this situation? That's like, you know, basically, am I a bad mom for putting my daughter in a sport that's going to make her so upset, that's going to take her to this level of just complete devastation? And that I was really taken aback because I'd never thought of it from the parent's perspective like that. And I said, no, you're actually giving her a gift. You are giving her this experience that most people, you know, that don't compete in sports, if they ever even do get an opportunity to put everything on the line like this, of course we're going to fail. Like, we're human. We're going to have so many failures in life. And look at what she just learned at such an early age. And I was like, you're not a bad mom. You're actually a great mom. And this is such a unique experience for somebody her age to learn. And I think that's something that athletics teach young people. There's so many incredible lessons that we learn as athletes that sure can make us better athletes, but also just apply to make us better humans. And I think one of those things is, you know, putting obstacles in front of a child or a teenager and saying, you have to navigate this. And it's sometimes it will go your way, but a lot of times it won't. And how are you going to react to it? And not only that, how are you going to help other people around you who are also going through a similar thing? You know, how are you going to help? And so I really, you know, resonate, and actually just brought up that story that I haven't thought about in a while, but I think it's a gift, you know, giving your kids athletics.
I love that. I love that whole arc that you just described of, you know, yes, failure and obstacles are part of life and you're helping your child understand that, but also helping your child become resilient, but also helping your child realize that they have to help other people. That's like the whole, that's the complete arc. I just think that's beautiful. And this is a great transition for the question that we would love to know from you is, you know, what's been your biggest obstacle?
As an athlete?
And, you know, anywhere, life, athletics.
Okay, so as an athlete, I would say my biggest obstacle was qualifying for my third Olympic team. And anybody that's seen Touch the Wall, it's, it's you know, immortalized now forever. But, you know, when I was trying to make the 2012 Olympic team, I was 26. And going to three Olympics, even, I mean, today it's not very common, but 8 years ago, it was even more rare. And it's so hard to explain this journey even to younger kids, but basically, you know, I was training with a team in Denver, Colorado, and giving it everything I had. And this is a question that you get all the time from kids, like, what about a plateau? What do you do? Or what do you do if the coach is playing favorites or something like that? And the only thing I can really say is you have to trust your gut. And so, you know, by no means did I think that my coach was playing favorites in Colorado, but I just knew in my gut that no matter how hard I worked at that program, I just wasn't getting the right kind of training that I needed for my age and for my event. And it didn't matter if I turned purple and threw up in practice and worked that. Nothing that I was going to do there was going to help me achieve my goal of qualifying for that team. And so I made a very difficult decision to move to a new program 3 months before Olympic trials as like a Hail Mary effort. In my gut, I knew it was the only way. It was like, okay, Kara, you have two options. You can either retire in, you know, May of 2012, April 2012, and not go to Olympic trials in June, or you can change everything, give it one last shot. And at the end of the day, when you retire, you can say you tried everything. And so it was a very, very stressful time in my life, a very difficult decision to make. And it ended up working. You know, I ended up making that team. And I don't like think about this that often, but it does kind of make me emotional. But it's because I was, you know, a seasoned athlete of 20 years by then and had learned how to trust myself that I was able to make that decision. And that's something that sports taught me. I would say that was my biggest obstacle as an athlete. Since athletics, probably just being a business owner in general, it's one of those things. There's so many unknowns. Like, you just have no idea what you're getting yourself into. And sometimes I think back, I'm like, okay, if I could tell 2016 Kara what, 2019, 2020 Kara would be going through as a business owner, would you still tell her to do it? And I'm like, of course I would. Like, this is like such a great business and it affects a lot of people in a positive way. But being a business owner just on a daily basis is like, what fire do I put out today? But it's a beautiful journey.
Yeah. Kelly. Yeah. It's so true. Yeah.
You're talking to two women business owners here.
Yeah.
So.
And I've been struggling just today with something really naughty and yeah. And Kelly was experiencing the same thing. So that's really true. Business, owning a business is hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's so worth it. It's so worth it.
It is. In fact, Maria asked me at the top of the show if I got my workout in today. I said, I was dressed, I was ready to go out. And then I got two phone calls and I sat there and did business for 2 hours and missed my workout, which
I think
rare.
It counts for something though. If you had the intention and you had the workout.
I like it.
I do too.
I love it. That's a great obstacle. And in fact, I love talking about self-trust because, in fact, we just had Jason Lezak on recently, and his whole theme, really, after talking with him for almost an hour, was self-trust. And one of the things we like to talk about, in fact, we'll probably do a whole show on, is something called gut wisdom, which is, you know, using that inner voice and going against, the normal way things would go, or being silent, listening to yourself. Can you describe to us, how you think you've used, you know, that inner voice or your gut wisdom to be successful?
Yeah. That even mentioning Jason Lezak, like, gives me chills, thinking about the trajectory of his career and how trusting his gut at the very end changed everything. I think as athletes, you know, and I think back to that young 10-year-old, 11-year-old girl who learned a really valuable lesson, and learning to trust your gut, it's only something that you can teach yourself. Like, you can't learn from a coach or a teacher how to listen to your inner gut and your, you know, really your inner monologue that knows you better than anybody. That's something that you learn, I think, by a lot of trial and error. It's like you make a decision that you're like, this is what everyone else is doing. I don't really think it's the best thing for me. And then it turns out, you know, it was a bad decision. And you knew all along, but you didn't really know how to tap into that inner wisdom, or maybe just peer pressure, things like that. But I think it just comes from being put in a lot of situations time and time again, where the only voice that really matters is your own voice, and learning how to listen to that and how to trust that. But look at how many times as athletes were put in those positions. And, you know, when you get to be in your 20s or in your 30s, you've flexed this muscle so many times in your life, you know how to listen to her, and it really serves well.
You know, I don't think, I mean, it sounds like you had the confidence to do that, but I think this is something, I'm 57. Okay. I can't remember that last number anymore. 57, I think. Yeah. And I am just learning this now. And I think partly that's because I am a people pleaser, and I do, you know, I've got the shoulds running through my mind all, you know, should do this, should do that. I'm always looking around and seeing, you know, looking for approval from others. And this whole concept of just being still and listening and thinking, does this sit right, is kind of new and beautiful. And I'm delighted that you're teaching this to teenage girls, because they need it. Everybody needs it. But to just say, hey, you can trust yourself to know the right thing.
Yeah, it sounds like, Kara, you were gifted with that and many other characteristics that makes you successful. But what would you say, you know, 1 to 3 things that are kind of unique to you that have made you successful? What characteristics?
I don't think I've ever been asked that. Okay, so characteristics that have made me successful.
Yeah, like just what's made you a success? What's made you a success? What's the secret sauce for Kara?
I know, I want to answer this right. So I think perseverance, and I know that's what a lot of athletes say, but for me, I know it was true as an athlete, and I can see it validated every day as a business owner. I think just not giving up and learning about the value of perseverance, that's been really big for me. And, you know, the idea, and the first time I ever heard this is actually from my college coach, Jack, but the idea that Rome wasn't built in a day, there's just like, it's so rare to truly see somebody that has overnight success. And we can see someone that, you know, we haven't followed on their come up and think like, oh my gosh, where did they come from? They must have this crazy amount of overnight success. And that really just doesn't happen. And it comes from a lot of perseverance. And, you know, there's been frustrating days as a business owner, and it's like, do I really want to continue on with this? You know, what is the actual outcome? I want to see more success up front, but it's like, no, you're in it for the long game. Something that's kind of funny, you know, as an athlete, I wanted to be an Olympian from the age of 7. And just by default of being a 7-year-old, you have to play the long game to go to the Olympics. Like, you're not going to make it at 8.
That's right. That's right.
You're not going to make it at 10. And it took 11 years for me to qualify for my first Olympics after I set that goal. And then something changes in adulthood where we think like, oh, wait, I should have success a lot sooner. I should be able to accomplish this, this, and this, or, you know, why am I not on Forbes 30, like whatever it is. And it's like, have you put in your 11 years? Have you put in like the true amount of time that it takes to, perfect a craft or excel at something? And, so I think perseverance is a huge one for me. And then let me see, this is kind of funny, but, I don't really care what people think. And I don't mean that in like a bad way.
No, that's a great quality.
And I think I've always been that way. I don't really care about other people's opinions of me. I am a pleaser to an extent, but at the end of the day, I won't take it too far and damage, you know, myself or my own journey to please others. And I think that has served me well. And I'm not sure how to teach that, but that's something that I know is a part of like my true identity. And then third, got perseverance, got don't care what people think. I don't know, maybe good old hard work, good old, like just nose to the grindstone, hard work. I love working really hard. I always have, and I like winning. It's not so much that I don't like the feeling of I just love the feeling of like winning. And I think that comes from having older brothers and growing up in a very competitive household where I was probably not like, you know, whatever you do in life, like you just don't want your younger sibling to beat you. And especially if your younger sibling is a girl and you're a boy, it's just even worse. And so I got so much satisfaction growing up if I ever could do anything to beat my brothers, and they made it difficult. but yeah, I guess that those three things I could sum up as.
I love it. And Kara, I do too. I have two older brothers.
Yeah.
And actually a younger brother too. So all I wished for was a little sister. Like when my mom had that fourth child, you wanted an older sister. I wanted a little sister, but, yeah. My little brother actually turned out way better than any little sister I could have had. And that is Maria's husband.
He's no amazing. Way. He's amazing.
Oh my gosh. I love this.
So he's the best swimmer of the whole household, even though, you know, I went to Olympic trials. He could have really made the team. He would rather have been a doctor. So
yeah.
Bless his heart.
He had too many other interests.
Yeah. He was too talented at too many things. I love your introspection and your stories. Like you're a great storyteller.
You sure are.
We loved hearing stories. So we've talked about characteristics, but we love to hear about maybe daily routines or rituals that you do that are unique to you being a champion. Like, you know, we know the old one from the general that says, make your bed every morning. And, you know, Marie and I say we make our beds every morning.
Yeah, is there I do that. Else?
Yeah, I do that. But is there any, are there any routines or rituals that you think help make you successful?
Yeah. You know, I think something that's kind of funny about the sport of swimming is we don't even realize how much meditation we get just by doing our sport. Like meditation is kind of a hot topic now, and it's really beneficial for mental health. And I don't know how meditative like playing basketball is or playing soccer or volleyball, because there's so many, you know, factors around you that you have to constantly consider. But when you're staring at a black line for hours and hours every day, you get a lot of me time. You get a lot of thinking time, and it's extremely meditative. And when I retired, I had this like weird, like jittery feeling. I don't know if it's jittery, but just like kind of this crawling feeling like I'm missing something, something's wrong. And I never, once I retired, I was very fortunate. I didn't want to go back to my sport. I didn't want to do a Brett Favre or anything like that. Like I was so content with being done swimming, but I couldn't shake this feeling that I was still missing something. And I think what it was I was missing the meditative feeling that swimming had given me every day. And so I started walking. And I walk almost every day, anywhere from 3 to 6 miles. And it's like that home-based feeling again that I had for 20 years. And it's my time to just think, and it's my time for myself. And so I would say that's a big part of my routine. And another thing, you know, I'm definitely all about making the bed, but I am not a morning person. You know, you're forced to be a morning person in this sport. But I know like in my like genetic circadian makeup, I am not a morning person. I'm a night owl. And I try to honor that in myself. I know that there's a lot of like early bird gets the worm, yada, yada. But if I know that's not me, I don't get the best out of myself if I'm trying to wake up at 6 a.m. and get my workout in and, you know, hit my computer by 7. So I do sleep a little bit later. I wake up probably around 7:30, probably between 7:30 to 8:30. And then I get my day started a little bit slower, and it really kicks up in the afternoon and in the evening. And that's just me being true to myself.
I love that. And that's, yeah, knowing yourself and trusting your gut. And also I'm hearing just a beautiful confidence, self-confidence. Is that something you've had to work for, or is it, you know, just a gift?
I think it's a gift. I think knowing oneself and being true to that, I think it can be learned, but it can also be a gift. And it's a really powerful thing when you have the ability to do that and to honor yourself.
That is so cool. Well, I love that you're confident in yourself, and where the whole society, you know, there's the 5 a.m. wake up club, the morning group, the like, if you're willing to say, hey, I'm a night owl. In fact, you might want to look in. This is another thing I love. Dr. Michael Breus, B-R-E-U-S. He's a PhD. He's a sleep specialist. He has a book called The Power of When. And he says there are 4 archetypes of sleep. There's the bear, the wolf, the lion, and the dolphin. And it sounds like you are a wolf who is a night owl. And he says embrace your whichever one of these archetypes that you are, and that you'll be more productive. So it sounds like you are doing exactly, you know, what you need to be doing to be the most productive. So
I read on one of Bill Gates' top reads for 2019 was Why We Sleep. Oh. And I read that earlier this year, and it was like, oh my gosh, like I knew it. I'm a night owl. Like
trusting your gut.
Yeah, but it was also validating to hear a scientific explanation for it.
Kelly, what are you? Which one of those 4 animals are you?
I can't really figure that out. I think I'm a dolphin, which is somebody who's a little bit of an insomniac, and they actually sleep. The dolphin is known to sleep lightly, almost like they're swimming while they're sleeping, because dolphins like with one eye open. So I'm very awake at night. Like I'm a light sleeper. I feel like sometimes I don't even sleep, but they say that you are actually asleep, but you're just not in a deep level of sleep. So that's the opposite. No, that's not the opposite of the wolf, but it's just, it's different. And just to go over them real quick, that dolphin is, they sleep with half their brain on and they're kind of insomniacs. The lions are the morning hunters. They're the top of the food chain. They get out and get it done. My husband is a lion. He is up, 5 o'clock. He's, on the golf course at 6. Then the bears are kind of a go with the flow. They sleep well, they sleep kind of any time. And then the wolves are more like night owls. What do you think you are, Maria?
I'm a lion, and I'm very self-righteous about it.
Yeah, I think you're a lion.
I do more before 7 o'clock. I'm so delighted to be out there on the road cycling before anybody else is out. It could be pitch black, 3 a.m. I'm feeling, so proud of myself. Of course, then I'm terrible at, in late afternoon and early evening, I'm exhausted. So,
and Kara, we've interviewed so many swimmers and we ask a lot of them. One of the questions you'll hear at the end in our little speed round, which we already know the answer to, is are you a morning person or a night person? And many, 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 many of our swimmers actually say, well, I don't know. I was forced to be a morning person because of swimming, but I really don't know because, you just don't know. If your alarm clock's been going off all your life to get up for swim practice, you don't know whether that's, but how did you do it then? Speaking of that, like if you were really a night owl, did you find that alarm was just, ugh?
Yeah. People have like trigger noises and, my alarm. But if you talk to my college coach, Jack, we had practice between 5:15 and 5:30 every single morning. And Jack knew I was not a morning person. Once I get there and I'm in the water, I'm fine. But I am such a deep sleeper. And I feel like my best sleep probably happens between like 4 a.m. and 7 a.m. And so like Jack had, I was on his speed dial. If I wasn't on the pool deck, within a few minutes before the start of practice, he would call me and sometimes he would wake me up. I would say I overslept morning practice, not overslept and missed it, but like overslept by 15 minutes or something, probably at least, 2 or 3 times per season, which is like you hear of like really accomplished athletes and they're like, oh, I was there 30 minutes early every day, getting my warm up in. And, no, I was so and Jack knew. There were times where between prelims and finals at big meets, he would say, okay, everybody, get your nap in probably 30 to 45 minutes. And then he'd look at me and he called me Kay. He'd look at me and be like, Kay, I want 2 to 3 hours. I'd be like, okay, great. I can do that. But he knew that I really needed it.
Yeah. Wow. And yeah, when we interviewed Natalie Coughlin, she's like, I don't care if I miss a half hour of sleep. I need to be at the pool a half hour before everybody.
That was
It was one of the, I just love how you know yourself.
Yes.
It's really, really, really impressive. So, well, just real quickly, because Jack Bowerly is truly one of my favorite people in the world. I got to tell you a little story. I was a fellow SEC coach. I was a head coach at South Carolina in the early 90s when Jack was obviously the head coach at Georgia. And, you'll love this as a woman. I was the only woman head coach in the Southeastern Conference. So there's 12 head coaches. I'm the only woman. And frankly, just to be very honest, the men, other coaches were just not very friendly to me. And Jack Bowerly was such a class act. He just embraced me. And of course, immediately Jack has a nickname for everyone. So it just does not surprise me at all that you were Kay, because Jack is the only one that calls me Kel. He still calls me Kel to this day. Like the minute he meets me, Kel, if there's anything I can do for you, he's just a great, great guy. So give us just a brief, how was it to swim and win 18 NCAA titles under this amazing man?
I actually love talking about Jack. He's one of my favorite people on this planet. Funny story though, when I was getting recruited out of high school, I had my heart set on going to Auburn. And back in 2002, 2003, Auburn and Georgia were rivals, like, you know, not only in the SEC, but for the national title. It went back and forth between Auburn and Georgia for the better part of a decade. And so I was like, no, I'm going to swim for David Marsh and Kim Bracken. I'm going to go to Auburn. Like, I already know. And I went on my recruiting trip to Auburn and I was like, oh no, this is not the place for me. This is not what I thought it was going to be. Shoot. But my recruiting trip for Georgia was the next weekend. And I showed up on campus and it was like the clouds parted and the sun like shined through in the most beautiful way and lit up the University of Georgia campus. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like heaven on earth. And Jack walked out of his office and came over and shook my hand. And, you know, Jack is probably 5'6", 5'7". I want to be fair. 5'7". But his presence is like 6'8". You know, he carries mm-hmm. such a big presence with him and always has a smile on his face. And he's like, hey, Carolyn, welcome to Georgia. And I think I told him like the next day, you know, you're not supposed to commit to a school on your trip. And I think I told him the next day that I was going to come to Georgia because I just knew right away. And swimming for him for 7 years, it's like one of the best decisions I ever made. And, you know, I, of course, learned a lot about swimming, you know, being one of Jack's athletes, but I also learned really how to treat people. Like, he is such a great human and he always sees the best in people. It doesn't matter if, you know, they mess up. It doesn't matter if they've wronged him before. It doesn't matter if they've made mistakes. Jack will always find the best in people and he seeks that out. And not only that, he treats everybody with like the utmost respect. Every year, I think for Christmas, you know, if you've ever been to Athens and like had lunch with Jack, Jack's like the mayor of Athens. Everybody knows him. It's like he'll be like, hey, you want to go to lunch? I'm like, Jack, but we can't talk if we go to lunch because everyone stops you. Like we have to go somewhere private. But he would give all of his Christmas gifts away to the people that were our pool staff, to the people that did the chemicals, the guys that turn the lights on every morning. He treated everybody just equally and with a ton of respect. And I learned a lot, you know, having gone to college at 17, I learned a lot about how to treat people just from Jack, you know, regardless of the swimming stuff I learned from him. He's just such a great human. And I think his legacy, you know, the fact that you're the only female coach and he's like the guy that's like, hey, let me take you under my wing. Something I actually loved about him too. This used to make me so proud, but when we would swim an SEC school or even go to SECs, a lot of people take recruiting trips within the same conference. So people that came to a Georgia recruiting trip would be at Florida, would be at Auburn, would be at South Carolina. And Jack would always like go up and shake people's hands if they had committed to Florida, you know, maybe they were a sophomore or junior at another school. Like, he was so happy to see them. Like, hey, how you doing? Oh, you're doing good. Good for you. And like, he's just so happy for everybody, even if they weren't Georgia Bulldogs. And I used to be so proud that like Jack and Harv kept those relationships up with kids that they had recruited, even after they went to other places. That was something that really stood out to me.
Yeah. He is such an amazing individual. We interviewed him on episode number 35. If any of our listeners want to go
stories.
Back. Yeah. He's just
it was
great.
A great
in fact,
interview.
In
yeah.
fact, Kara, you may be the one that he talks about in the interview. Maria, do you remember he says, I have a friend who comes into town. Who
oh,
I try
yes,
to take
yes,
out.
Yes.
He says, I try to take one of my, it may be you. I try to yeah. take one of my friends out to lunch and they won't go out because we always get interrupted.
Yeah. He's because literally the mayor.
Like, yeah, he knows everyone.
Person in town. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Everyone wants to speak to him because he makes them feel good. And that's just a great quality. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in all fairness, I will say, and it's funny that you were looking between Auburn and Georgia, David Marsh was very polite and very nice to me as well. It was Jack and David that were.
That treated you well.
That treated me well. Others, I can't go there. But
well, anyway, for a reason, I swam for David at the very end of my career. I tucked my Georgia tail and begged him to let me come swim for him. And he was great. I have a great relationship with David as well.
Oh, yeah. He's a great, great man as well. So, well, I could just girl talk with you the whole time and fangirl out on Jason Lezak. And, you know, it's like, Maria, you want to give Kara our last question?
Yeah. Well, the last question is what we ask everyone is there Anything that we haven't brought up that you'd like to say or share with our listeners?
Gosh, I feel like I could go down such a rabbit hole with Jack, just to talk about the goodness of that human.
Yeah.
I think we've covered a lot of really good things. I don't want to be too cliche for your listeners, but I think you guys did a very good job of bringing out things that are really true to me. And if I can maybe reiterate anything or drive home any points, I think that, you know, learning how to trust your gut is one of the most important things that a woman can do. And, you know, something that we talk a lot about at LEAD is, I think we all have really high goals as athletes, whether you make it as far as you can in the sport or not. The sport is still such a small part of your life as a whole. But the lessons that you learn being an athlete carry with you forever. And, you know, arguably make you better at literally everything that you want to do in life. And so one of the things that we've noticed at LEAD, we have girls that will come and they'll say, you know, I used to want to be an Olympian and I kind of know that that's not going to happen for me. But something that I want to do now is I think I want to be a coach and I want to be a woman that inspires other girls. And that's something that it hits home every time it happens. But I think I want people to know that however far you make it in this sport or whatever sport you're in, it's just such a worthwhile journey. And whatever you can do when you're done to turn around and give back or improve the experience of the next generation is an incredible thing. And the more women that we have do that, the better. Men are great too, but the more women we have in sports, the better.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Kara, this has been just fabulous. We have one little fun section that goes really quick. It's called our speed round. And are you ready to play?
I got my adrenaline. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Wait, she knows how to play games. I saw that you were on The Price is Right. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. she's going to fly through this then.
That sounded so fun. Sorry, I interrupt. Go ahead, Kelly.
All right. Hey, Gilbert. Cat or dog?
Dog.
Red or blue?
Blue.
Milk chocolate or dark chocolate?
Dark.
Kickboard or no kickboard?
Board.
Mountains or beach?
Beach.
Football or baseball?
Baseball.
iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
This one we know, morning person or night owl?
You know it, I'm a night owl.
All right, do you wear fingernail polish?
Not as much anymore.
Okay, Maria?
All right, here's a short answers. Favorite color?
Pink.
Nice. Favorite pizza topping?
Cheese.
Oh, favorite vegetable?
Broccoli.
Favorite swim complex in the U.S. that you've swum in?
Unpopular opinion, the Old Tennessee Pool.
I can dig that.
What's your shoe size?
11.
And we know you have siblings, two brothers. Mm-hmm. Favorite Star Wars character?
I didn't watch it. I'll say Princess Leia.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah, I think it's a good answer. Can you cook?
Yes.
Okay. And what word comes to mind most when you dive in the water, when you used to dive into the water anyway for a race?
Oh, for a race?
Yeah.
Probably go. For practice, I can't say that word.
I love it.
It's a cold pool. I always just thought, oh, this is cold. Yeah. All right. Well, this has just been magical.
Such a delight. You're such a delightful, delightful
person.
You
guys are doing an amazing job. I see your stuff everywhere. You've interviewed a lot of my heroes and you're making a big impact. So I have been completely honored to be on your podcast and even be invited. It was a very welcome email to get. And I want to thank you for everything that you guys are doing with your podcasts and with sports and just being two women at the helm of this. It's incredible.
Oh, wow. Oh,
thank you. That means a lot.
That is so encouraging. Thank you.
It is. We could use that. Thank you. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. right. Well, best of luck. We'll be following you and we'll be sending people to the
lead
summit for sure.
Thank you, ladies.
All right. Thank you, Kara. Bye-bye.
Takeaways, takeaways, takeaways. We've heard from you that your favorite section of our podcast is the takeaways. Thank you so much for that feedback. But before we get to the takeaways today, we wanted to ask you if you would please give us a 5-star review. That way, more people will be able to find our podcast. Also, if you could subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify, you'll never miss a podcast episode if you subscribe. And please share our podcast with your friends. And now, the takeaways.
Well, Maria, as I said, that was magical. It truly, like you said, I think we just really connected with Kara. Yeah. The way that what she's doing with LEAD and influencing young women and giving so much to so many, you just can't help but be impressed. And like I said, in the show, I just loved her stories.
Yeah,
and
she had great stories.
I could just paint the picture and I could see the things that she was going through. Yeah. Well, like we always say, there are many, many takeaways, but we're each going to do two. What was your first takeaway?
Well, it's clearly trusting your gut. She, there wasn't a story that she told that didn't include some aspect of that, even when she wasn't, you know, really consciously talking about trusting herself. This is a person who has learned, I guess, at an early age that, you know, she can take the time out and think about how she feels about something. And if it doesn't feel right, she's not going to do it. And, you know, she told that incredible story about, you know, changing things up at the last before her final Olympics. But she also told the story of going to her recruiting trips at Auburn and UGA and, you know, and planning on Auburn, wanting Auburn, and then going there and just going, no. And then going to UGA. And she said, the clouds parted. Right there, she was going with how she felt inside. Like, this feels right. There was not like a list she was checking off. And for me, this is, as I said in the show, this is not natural. You know, I've looked to others for so long, and I love lately, you know, maybe the last year or so, I've been working harder at just listening to myself, literally listening to my body. Which, you know, I've always separated out my body and my brain, but now I'm listening to my body for, you know, what I should be doing, what's feeling good, what sits right with me, not just what people are telling me. So I think this is such an important takeaway. You really need to trust yourself and learn to trust yourself. I guess learn to listen to yourself.
Yes, listening to yourself. And we do that, you know, in silence generally.
Yes,
and,
yes.
That was, you know, that's the title of the show, is Trust Your Gut. So I think that's a great takeaway. My first takeaway was the long game. I loved her analogy or her story of wanting to go to the Olympics starting when she was 7 years old. So when you're a 7-year-old and you want to go to the Olympics, that is certainly the long game. She said it took her 11 years to make her first Olympic team. And then she said, so why does that change when we're an adult? And let's say we start a business and we're at age 7 in our adult entrepreneurialism. Why do we think we're going to be an overnight success?
Yeah,
we're not.
Yeah, I think that's a great example.
Yeah. And she said, Jack, her swim coach, said, you know, she always, he said, you know, Rome was not built in a day, which is a famous saying, not just Jack saying, but certainly that quality of perseverance, of seeing the long game, of staying in it, I think is a message that we can all use in athletics, in life, in relationships, in our businesses. So that's one of her characteristics and keys to her success, was that perseverance.
Yeah, I really identified with that because I do have that quality. I am, as we've talked about, I will persevere to a fault. But I love the idea that if you just keep putting brick on brick, you're going to come up with a Rome one day. and I do try to live that. So I love that. I think that's really true. The other side of it is knowing when you can trust your gut to say, you know, this isn't working for me. And she gave that example too. So I think it's, if you have a good gut, then you can be really perseverant.
Yeah, you know, because we do the draft picks on these, yeah. and you're like, yeah, well, Kelly, that one's not you. I'm like, I know, that's why I want to talk about it. Because so that, Maria, that is such a great point, that while she does play the long game, when she changed swimming training venues 3 months before the Olympic trials, that was not the long game. So sometimes you do really have to just bail on something, right, and say, right, you know, it's not working. So that's a really great point.
Yeah, thanks. So in my second takeaway, which I truly love because I didn't get a chance to tell Kara, but it really spoke to me. She talked about the importance of the meditation aspect of swimming for her, that she didn't even know she was missing it until she stopped swimming. And interestingly, when I started swimming a few years ago, well, it's been a long time ago, that was something that really stuck with me, that it wasn't just staring at the black line and the silence as you're swimming. It was the breathing, because you're breathing deeply and rhythmically, and you know, it's very, very calming. And so I really love this idea that somehow you must incorporate this period of quiet, away, deep breathing. You know, you can do it while you're exercising. I've been doing it at other times too, you know, where you can just get into a different space, you know, leaving your sympathetic mode, getting into your parasympathetic mode, where your brain waves are all long and smooth. And swimming is a great way to do that, or just deep breathing, or as she said, walking and being in nature is another great way to do that. So it's under, you know, we talk about it and it's in the press a lot, but I don't think people really do it. You really have to do it. And it can really change, you know, how you feel. It can really, really reduce stress, which is wonderful.
Yes. And it's going to tie, that one ties into the gut wisdom, because you can only really listen to your gut in silence.
That's right.
So when you're walking quietly or swimming, you know, when you don't have an audiobook on or somebody talking with you or the radio or TV, that's when you get your best gut wisdom. So I think, again, that's a routine that she said that she incorporates every day,
right,
that she does
those
walks.
That's right. That was her ritual of, yeah. Yeah, champion.
Yeah.
That's good.
Wonderful.
What's your last takeaway?
So my second takeaway was that she's not a people pleaser. You know, she just doesn't really care what people think. And I think that's part of confidence. It's part of owning your gut wisdom. It's part of, you know, just having that confidence, trusting yourself. And you know, it's just a big one. So the takeaway is that you have to not really care what people think.
Yeah. And if you're trusting yourself, then that's easier. If you have that kind of confidence, that's a lot easier. So you can develop that. Yeah. I think that's a great takeaway, Kelly.
Well, Maria, that one, I think is going to reach so many people and hit them in the right place. And you know, I hope that our listeners will connect with this conversation as much as we did.
Yes, I expect they will. It was a beautiful interview.
Yes. Maria, awesome spending time with you as always.
Yeah, I love you,
and
Kelly.
I love you so much.
And I love you too. We'll talk soon.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This week's quote of the week comes from Carolyn Joyce. Perseverance is so important. It means playing the long game.
You've been listening to the Champions Mojo podcast with host Kelly Palace and Maria Parker. Champions Mojo is produced by Cabra Media, and a new episode debuts every Tuesday. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. Follow Champions Mojo on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @ Champions Mojo.